So to think about this, think about Aristotle's fascination with how the plots of tragedy, and particularly here the plot of his favorite example, Oedipus Rex, Sophocles' Oedipus the King, how these plays all reveal the complex problems that are involved in our understanding of action, that is, praxis, the real action, and the complexities in the notion of action or in the fact of action that generate these problems. Because I think it's this fascination that is on Aristotle's part that is revealed in his repeated saying throughout the Poetics that tragedy is the imitation of an action. Now, we can think about this in two different ways. That is, we can think about the ambiguity of action in two importantly interesting and interestingly different ways. One is this, that actions of an agent can be given many different descriptions, so that one and the same bodily action engaged in by a moral agent can have many different descriptions. And the same action, therefore, can be understood to be under one description good and under another description bad. It's that multiplicity or ambiguity of human action, what one scholar of tragedy has called the doubleness of the deed, that results in the phenomenon of tragic conflict. And many people think that this notion of tragic conflict is what is the central feature of tragedy. They look, for example, at a play like The Antigone, in which Antigone has to either bury her brother or not bury her brother, and it looks as though, on Sophocles' view, under one description it's the right thing to do, and under another description it's the wrong thing to do, and then that turns out to be the fundamental tragic ambiguity of action. Now, I don't want to deny that that's important, but I want to suggest that there is another and more important ambiguity that Aristotle takes as paradigmatic for him, and it's revealed in his taking not the Antigone, but Oedipus Rex, Oedipus the King, as the central tragedy that for him is paradigm. This ambiguity is not, as it were, lateral between a series of equally applicable descriptions of actions, but it's on a different dimension, and it's a distinction between two different modes of capturing and individuating actions. On the one hand, an action is the object of the deliberation and choice of an acting agent. It's, in other words, it's what we do in the sense that it's what we are about and what we take ourselves to be doing. So my action is, in this sense, what I do. But on the other hand, an action is what we do in the sense of what emerges as the result of our activity. An action, in other words, is an entity in the world that emanates out of my action, but that then subsequently has a life of its own. I take it that what Aristotle wants to point to, as revealed primarily in tragedy, is the constant possibility of a fracture between these two aspects of action. Tragic lives, as it were, figure the chance of rift between actions understood as the expressions of the character, the intentional choices, the decisions of moral agents, on the one hand, and on the other hand, actions as events in an objective world outside the control of those agents, actions with a life of their own, which transcend thus the intentions and plans of their authors, that is, of the moral agents that initiate the action. And what is important to Aristotle is this fact, and also what follows from this fact, the distinction between guilt and blameworthiness, or more critically, the distinction between being responsible for an action and being somehow blameable for an action. And then, on the other hand, the power of an institution like tragic poetry to help us come to terms with the terrible weight of that distinction and of the fault line in our practical lives on which it rests. In other words, in the background of the Poetics, Aristotle's interest in questions of moral action, but, as it were, the pathology of such action, or where they break down, or where they go wrong. His attention is on the way in which our deliberations, our choices, our moral plans, however good they are, may ultimately prove feckless, may ultimately offer us no safe choice, and then of the fear and the pity which are occasioned by the recognition of this fact. Consider it, at our very best, acting out of good character, with good deliberation, we often will, at one crossroad or another in our life, act in ways that bring about our downfall, killing a man whom we take to be a brigand, but whom the gods in their diffident cunning know to be our father. And that's a way of describing what happens in Sophocles' play, The Oedipus Rex. The fears occasioned by this recognition are more general than the fear that we might kill our fathers. They are rather the fears that lie at the heart of our recognition that goodness of character, excellence of deliberation, cannot guarantee our happiness. That actions, good from the point of view of the agent, may nonetheless, through no fault of the agent, be revealed as bad in that very world in which they are enacted.